tamascaiva tamasattvam rajastatha. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance, O son of heart. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there's always competition for supremacy. So it's clear from this verse that the modes are always changing, fluctuating, and they're competing with one another for supremacy or for prominence. This happens in the society and also in the individual. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that this takes place by adrishta vashat, or by some unseen force. You cannot see the modes of nature, but they are very powerfully influencing everyone. So he says it's adrishta vashat, some unseen force. So Prabhupada says this competition is always going on. Therefore, one who is actually intent on advancing in Krishna consciousness has to transcend these three modes. Then he says something very important. The prominence of some certain mode of nature is manifested in one's dealings, in his activities, in eating, etc. So what else? Talking, sleeping, or rising up. Dealings means interactions between other you and other people. Also your moving around, how you get around. All this will be explained in later chapters. But if one wants, he can develop by practice the mode of goodness and defeat the modes of ignorance and passion. So if you want, you can develop goodness by practice. And if you want passion, you can cultivate that. If you want ignorance, you can cultivate that. So you can choose. Of course, most people, they don't know that. Most non-devotees don't know about the modes of nature at all. So they just kind of flow with whatever modes are in their heart. But a devotee, through the shastra, he can actually change the mode that he's in by practice. Prabhupada is saying this. And we have to know what to aim for, and then later we'll discuss how to adjust ourselves. At least we'll take Krishna's instructions in the Uddhava Gita, which goes into more detail than the Bhagavad Gita. So it's considered superior. Prabhupada continues, although there are these three modes of material nature, if one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness. So if one's determined, right, he can practice being in the mode of goodness. So you can see that it's not, the mode of goodness doesn't just fall out of the sky on your head. You have to practice it. Because especially nowadays in this age, although one may be born in a good family and he may have a prominence of goodness, still the lower modes, there will be always some competition, some fighting, some transformations. The lower modes will attack you. Ignorance and passion will attack you. And if you're, so you can increase your mode of goodness by practice if you're determined to do so. And this is good. We need to do this. Although, I mean, chanting Hare Krishna and our bhakti sadhana, this is the strongest means to bring us out from the lower modes. But we also rise early. We also shower. Right? All of these things. That's to help us to come to goodness. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sometimes he didn't bathe for a week or two, because he saw it as a waste of time. Because he's a Mukta Purush, there's no modes of nature affecting him. But he said to his disciples, but you shouldn't do this. Don't imitate me, because you'll immediately fall into the mode of ignorance. But someone who's above the modes of nature, for him, there's no real need for him to shower in the early morning, because he's already higher than the mode of goodness. For us, it's like we wake up in ignorance and we shower, and that helps to wash away those modes. My point is, I'm saying that Prabhupada gave us these regulations of Vaishnava etiquette and hygiene in order to augment and to support our bhakti sadhana. So similarly, there are other ways that we can support and augment our bhakti sadhana. And in this way, we practice placing ourselves in the mode of goodness. Because we have to admit that our hearing and chanting is not all it could be. You know, if we're not chanting Shuddha Nam, that means that we could use some support in our bhakti sadhana. Our hearing and chanting is not very good, or it's not as good as it should be. You know, our mind is racing here and there, or sometimes we fall asleep when we're chanting. So although devotional service is the highest practice, but we're not practicing it as well as we should. So therefore, as a support, we use this, we practice being in the mode of goodness and with our dealings, and we check ourselves through knowledge of given by Krishna in the Gita and so forth. So Prabhupada ends the commentary saying, but so by transcending goodness he can come to the Vasudeva state, so nirgun. And then he can fully realize God. See, the Vasudeva state is bhava bhakti. And bhava bhakti is described by Rupa Goswami. What is it? Vishuddha sattva visheshatma prema suryamsu samyabhav. So the person in bhava bhakti, he or the Vasudeva state, he's Vishuddha sattva. He has come to above the mode of goodness, and he's not affected by the modes of nature, and because he's in this bhava, is the prema. Prema suryangshu samyabhat. It's like a ray of the prema sun, the bhava. So then one is above the modes of nature completely. Vishuddha sattva. So we're not on bhava bhakti, and we're not uttam adhikaris, and a lot of us are kanishta adhikaris. So therefore, it would help us to actually practice being in the mode of goodness. And we'll talk about that again later. So now one may ask that, how may I know which mode is prominent? Because they're always competing. Sometimes goodness is prominent, passion or ignorance. Well, how do we know which one is prominent? So the Lord answers this question in the next three verses. Text 11. Sarvadvarishu dehismin prakasha upajayate jnanam yada tada vidya vivrid. How they extracted this meaning from the word uta. That the happiness, you know, and the illumination, where it comes from within. Person's self-satisfaction comes from within, not from an external cause. And this is from his knowledge. So the jnana, jnanam yada tada vidyat, viridam sattvam ityuta. So person in goodness has the right discrimination. He won't eat things in ignorance. He won't eat flesh. and other horrible, untouchable things. He won't drink alcohol, take intoxicants, because he has the right discrimination. For him, it will taste horrible. Meat. Ugh. I mean, just now, devotees, right? If you smell someone cooking meat, it will smell horrible. Or if you're driving in the highway and you smell the slaughterhouse, it's like the most disgusting smell you can imagine. Right? But people in ignorance, it doesn't bother them. Just like in Korea, Prabhupada says that there they eat dogs. And they actually make a kind of dog nectar. They put the dead dog in a pot and they close the pot. And then they let it sit there for a few months. And the body begins to ferment and bubble and there's some juice that comes out. And from the bottom they have a tap. And they put their cup and they drink that. Can you imagine? And for them, that's their drink, their nectar drink. Can you imagine? I mean, it's amazing. But that is factual. In the hotel, I think Prabhupada mentioned that there was this pot. And Prabhupada said, "What is that?" And they said, "Well, they don't ask. They're putting these dogs in there." So in the Orient, you know, the tamagun is very prominent in many places, like in the religious practices too. Like they eat these eggs. I think they're ostrich eggs or just regular chicken eggs. But they bury them in the ground for years. And they're rotten, like anything, you know. And the older they are, the more delicious it is considered. That's more rotten, you know. And they eat like these things. And they have some ceremonies where they, like in a conference hall, they set out a table with a cloth and nice ceramic plates with crystal glasses and silverware, and they cook a big feast and they serve out this feast. And then they offer this to the forefathers. You know, like they consider the forefathers come as ghosts and sit and they eat all this stuff. And they also dig up the bones of the forefathers, wash them, and then put them back into the ground. They have very old, you know, all tamagun. And you know the Chinese medicine is all like that. You can, if you ever tried Chinese medicine, it's also very tamasic. A lot of the stuff that they do in, not all the people, but a lot of the common practices are permeated with tamagun. It is said that in Hong Kong, it is said that Chinese people, they eat anything that flies in the sky, swims in the water, or walks on the ground. And if you go to the market, you'll see that they have turtles and birds and snakes in the marketplace, and people come there and they pick out, you know, a few turtle and a few pigeons, and the guy just takes it, cuts off the head, puts it in a bag, and gives it to, yeah. And huh? Yeah. Yeah, they're alive. They just take them and put, and then just put them in the bag, right in front of you. And they have these. Anyway, I can go on then. It's so horrible. I was preaching there for 1 year, but it's really an amazing place now. In Hong Kong. One time I was going on book distribution. I cut through the market to get to a street because it was much shorter. But I later relented because I there was a big garbage can, and right on top of it there was a head of a bull with these big horns, you know, and there was flies buzzing around and you know, two X's in the eyes of the bull head was just sitting there on the garbage can. It was like, oh. Such heavy ignorance. And every day at around 5:30, the people would cook. You know, and like in the sweltering heat of the summer when there's no breeze and everybody has their windows open, and everybody starts cooking fish at around the same time. And it's like the whole area, like that smell, the most disgusting smell of the most horrible kind of fish. It's enough to just knock you over. Every day around this time, it was like horrible. So people in the mode of ignorance, they enjoy this. But someone who has sattva, then dvareshu dehismin prakasham upajayati. There's this discrimination that he will not like these things. Naturally. He doesn't even have to, you know, convince himself. He just feels disgusted by this. But people in other cultures, you know, it's like tamagun is very heavy in different countries. Okay. Now, motive passion is described. Lobha pravrittir arambha karmalama shamaspriha rajasyatani jayante vivridhe bharatarshama. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. So here we have six lakshanas. In the previous verse there was just one, which was enough to describe the mode of goodness. So here you have lobha, pravritti, arambha, karmana, and ashama, spriha. But arambha, karmana, I think sometimes they're seen as one lakshana, because it means, karmana means this kind of activity. So, lobha is the first thing. So this word very precisely describes the psyche of someone in Rajagun. He's greedy, because he's never satisfied. He always wants more and more and more. The rajas creates this urge that the person just feels unsatisfied and he wants more. More money, more sense gratification, more opulence, more activity, new activity, like this. Changing places. So, lobha. So lobha also, it indicates that the person has no desire to donate anything, to give charity, due to possessiveness. Even when there's a good cause, he doesn't want to give any donation because of lobha. Because he feels possessive over his money. Because actually he wants more money. So why should he give away some of the money that he has? Right? This is the idea. That's one thing. Then pravritti means activity, increasing activity. And arambha means he likes to start new work, always again and again. Sometimes we see also in our movement that some people in passion, you know, they're good at starting new projects. So we may send them somewhere to start a restaurant. And then they get that going, but then we have to put someone in as a manager who's a little bit more peaceful to maintain it. And then we send him over somewhere else to start a radio station. He goes there, he starts talking to people, raising money and running around, and then he gets a radio station. And then we have to put somebody else to maintain that. Then we send them somewhere else to start a gurukul, or, you know, this or that. But the problem with it, you know, this kind of, I don't know, in the West it's, we have a lot of devotees like this, you know. Not a lot, but there are some that they just have this new, they have to always start something new. So we can engage that passion, because passion is good to create, right? But to maintain, you need goodness. But the problem is with these people is that you know, usually what happens is wherever the person's working, they run out of manpower and money. Because to start new projects, you need money and manpower. So that's limited. The manpower and the money is limited. So sooner or later, the person burns out. And then they can't maintain themselves. Because in order to stay devotees, they have to be able to control their senses. And so this Arambha means that always something new, always new, starting new something. And then they never can finish what they start or maintain it. So we have to try to engage them. It's kind of like the traditional story about the genie, right? He says, engage me or I'll kill you. And the person says, oh, yeah. Oh, go clean those windows in that building. Genie goes there, he comes back. You've seen this drama, right? This classic ISKCON drama. Then the person says, engage me or I'll kill you. Okay, you climb up and down this pole. When you're, right, the genie starts, tries to engage him somehow. Then at the end he says, okay, give me some more engagement or I'll kill you. He says, okay, you sit down and chant this mantra. Like this usually. That's how they end the drama. So then ashama means uncontrollable desires to work due to dissatisfaction, restless senses, which is similar to arambha. They define it as separate. That means they always want to endeavor at something new work. Yeah, ashama spriha. But the defining is different. Ashama, they describe as like unfulfilled in sense enjoyment. Or restless senses. Due to dissatisfaction. And Prabhupada mentions, in the mode of passion, he's never satisfied with the position he has already acquired. He hankers to increase his position. So loba and arambha and ashama, aspriha, right? He never satisfied with his position. He always wants more and more and more. So I knew one devotee years ago, and he started as helping with the recruiting in a city temple. He would go on Harinams. And he was a nice devotee, actually. He led kirtan. He gave classes. He was friendly. He was preaching. But he was passionate. And then gradually, he got into management. He got some position as vice president. Then he became a president in a small temple. And then he got the opportunity to be the temple president in the major temple. And then he became the president there for a couple of years. And now his salary increased, his prestige increased. And that was like his plan. Gradually he was moving up from one to the next. And then he wanted to, his nature didn't allow him just to remain as the president of the big temple. That wasn't enough for him. He wanted more. So he ended up taking some training in some company. There was some international, multinational corporation which gave big salary, and it was having to do with this, it was the Stephen Covey group, right? So, and then plus some of the devotees were already into that thing, so it was kind of connected. So he moved up into this group, he got a big salary, and it was more prestige. And then, but his, his main thrust of his missionary work just dropped. More or less, it kind of edged him right out from the major, the inner core ISKCON missionary activity. So he's kind of somewhere on the outside now, because he was just And in retrospect, or in hindsight, I saw that although he was a good devotee, but there was just always this passion, and it never allowed him to feel satisfied in whatever post he had. He always wanted to increase his position. So even within our community, we can see that the symptoms can also manifest. Okay, now mode of ignorance, verse 13. Aprakasho pravittischa pramado moha ibacha tamasyatani jayante vivride kurunandana. When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. So here we have four words as lakshanas, with the word cha, which the charyas say means sleep. So along with those lakshanas, we have an added one, which was so nicely portrayed by our first drama group. So aprakasha, that's the opposite of the mode of goodness, right? There's no illumination. There's darkness. So that means that there's no discrimination. And the person accepts activities which are against the shastric injunctions, because he has no discrimination. And apravritti means there's no activity. That means he's lazy. Actually, the English word lazy, I think, must come from the Hindi word alas. Right? Alas. Lazy. Alazy. Ram nam me alasa. Bhojan me husiyar. And pramada, you know, it means kind of madness. Pramada here means that he's thinking that he doesn't have what he does have. He thinks that he doesn't have what he in fact possesses. And it's explained to, well, Prabhupada mentions, even though he has the capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. That is illusion. That could be what he's referring to. But another thing is that he doesn't accept the objects that are directly in front of himself. It's kind of like a prema vaichitya. He's feeling separation even though the object, the sense object, is directly in front of him. And moha just means absorbed in illusory objects. I remember when I was a younger devotee, a brahmachari book distributor, I never wanted to learn how to cook, because I could see that the cooks always had a very tough time. You know, they never went to the festivals. They never sent them to India. Although I knew a little bit cooking, but I would always say, no, I don't know how to do that. Trying to avoid it, because they would like lock me in on that service, and I didn't want that to happen. It's kind of like a mode of ignorance thing, trying to avoid something. So I had some ability, but didn't express that. Okay, so then 14. Someone may ask, what happens at the time of death when the different modes are prominent? Please explain each circumstance. So now Krishna describes what happens if you die in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. He begins with goodness. Yada satve pravridhi tu pralayam yati dehavrit tadotmana vidam lokan amalam pratipadyate. One who dies in the mode of goodness, he attains to the pure higher planets of the great sages. Tadottama vidhan lokan. So uttama vidham means these great sages, those who are knowers of transcendence. So they go to this lokan amalan, which is described as Brahma Loka or Jana Loka, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, these higher planets. So this is not just the mode of goodness without knowledge of transcendence. Knowledge of transcendence is considered part of the package in this description, because otherwise it's contradictory to other statements in the Shastras, because usually people who are in the mode of goodness, it is said in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, chapter 25, text 22, Satve Pralina Svar Yanti. Satve Pralina Svar, or Svarga Yanti. Someone who dies in Sattva, then he goes to Svarga, which means Indralok, Chandralok, these places. Huh? You want the reference again? 11.25.22 Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam gives a similar verse which describes this same as this section here. I'll read the whole verse. Satve pralina svaryanti naralokam rajolaya. Naralokam. Tamolayas tu nirayam. Yanti mam eva nirguna. Right? So here you got all four. Satve pralina svaryanti. Those in sattva go to svarga. Naralokam rajolayaha. Those who die in Raja, they go to Naralok. Tamalayas to Nirayam. Those in Tamas, they go to hell. Yanti mam eva Nirguna. But those who are in Nirgun, they come to me. So Prabhupada mentions Brahmalok, Janalok. This is a little bit higher than Indralok. That means there's more pure mode of goodness. Because we know in Indralok and in Svarga, there's still this sex desire, and you know, Brihaspati comes, Indra tries to steal Brihaspati's wife, or Surya's chariot driver is turned into a woman, and Surya has sex with her. Right? You've heard these stories before? There's a lot of far out, you know, stories about the devas. You know, they're always stealing each other's wives, soma, and right? You've heard someone. You know more than me, probably, all these things. But so in these planets, still you can see that there's some rajas mixed in with the sattva lifestyle. But from Janalok or Maharlok, Janalok, Tapalok, they're above. They're completely in sattvic gun. They're really, or they're considered mukta purush. They're actually even beyond that, like above the modes. More pure, yeah. Fifteen. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangeshu jayate. Tata pralinas tamasi muda yonishu jayate. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities, karma sangishu jayate. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, pralina tamasi, then he takes birth in mudha yonishu jayate. Mudha means bewildered, foolish, ignorant, stupid. But here it means in the animal kingdom. 16. Karmana sukritasyahu satvikam nirmalam phalam rajasastu palam dukam agyanam tamasa phalam. Now Krishna is describing actions in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. From 16 to 18, again three verses. The result of pious action is pure. Satvikam nirmalam phalam. And is said to be in the mode of goodness. But action done in passion results in dukkham, misery. Rajasastu phalam dukkham. And action in ignorance results in foolishness. Agyana tamasa phalam. So these are the ultimate end results of acting in each mode. So in the mode of goodness, one achieves purity, nirmalatvat. And in passion, one gets misery, dukkham. And we see that sometimes that may happen to us, even in our devotional life, in our devotional communities. Like in America, in the early days, we were distributing books, but we were doing it in mode of passion. And, we were pressuring people to give more and more money. And there was a kind of philosophy supporting that, you know, that the people, if they didn't give us their money, they were going to spend it on sinful activities. So in order to help them, we should try to take all their money and give it to Krishna. Of course, we didn't keep the money ourselves, but at the same time, we got into a kind of feverish pitch and a fanaticism about getting more money from people, and we would pressure them, you know, beyond their capacity. And it ended up in misery. People became angry at us, and it made us look bad, like we were greedy or something. And actually, we did become a little greedy, not for money for ourselves, but we became a little greedy in the sense of, like, competing with one another, who's going to collect the most and who's going to distribute the most, and like this. So instead of thinking about the benefit of the people, whether they're going to read the book, whether they're going to respect us, whether they're going to appreciate us, and use the knowledge, or then we just started thinking about how many book scores we can get and how much money we can collect. So because of that, it became more and more passionate, and gradually the whole preaching in America had to it was kind of stopped for about 10-12 years, because the people in all the public places and the airports and police and so forth, they stopped us. They didn't really want us out there because they thought we were just cheating people and so forth. So it ended up in misery. And of course, ignorance always results always results in ignorance or foolishness or lack of knowledge. That's the point here. Now Prabhupada says, he gives an example for activity in passion. He says that if one wants to have a skyscraper, so much human misery has to be undergone before a big skyscraper can be built. Can we close that? A little bit too noisy out there. A financier has to take much trouble to earn massive wealth, and those who are slaving to construct the building have to render physical toil. The miseries are there. And for the rest of the commentary, Prabhupada's talking about ignorance. He says, as far as ignorance is concerned, the performer is without knowledge, and all his activities result in present misery. And afterwards, he'll have to go on to an animal body. And animal life is always miserable. So he describes slaughtering the animals, he says, is due to the mode of ignorance. And the whole rest of the commentary is about slaughtering the cows. And he even quotes from the Rig Veda, Gobhi Pranita Matsaram. Like those who are killing the cow, they're envious. They're in the grossest ignorance. Sometimes people want some, you know, pramana for this point. So here we have from the Rig Veda. The Prabhupada mentions the word cows 6 times in this paragraph. Because this is the most ignorant activity and the most sinful activity and the most prominent activity, especially in the Western countries and now in India also. Something like 300,000 cows are killed daily in India, I've heard, by the devotees who run the goshalas in Vrindavan. And they told me that there's the statistics now there. And they showed me in Chopati in, I guess it was in, anyway, maybe February, March last year, that there was a new ISKCON documentary, and it showed slaughterhouses in India and how they, at night, they move the cows into the, you know, trucks, and they're treating them very poorly. I guess because they know that the people, you know, might become angry or something like this. It was so horrible. I couldn't even watch this movie. It was so horrible, I just had to leave. There was a report from Japan some years ago. The Japanese report from the slaughterhouse, and it showed that they were ready to slaughter a bull. But this bull started crying piteously and fell on the ground with tears in its eyes, moaning and groaning and mooing and crying, and sounded like just like a human being. And the Japanese men, they were so moved because they saw the human-like features of this bull that they decided they couldn't kill this animal and they just let it go. And it was in the news report. The bull was crying because he saw that he was going to be killed. And it was so piteous and it was so human-like that even the Japanese, you know, karmis, they said, we can't kill this animal. And they just sent him away. Amazing. So not only is it ignorant, but as you know, the cow is very dear to Lord Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada quotes this, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. Krishna is Govindaya. Right? Namo Namo. Probably the single most sinful activity in Kali Yuga, killing cows. That and illicit sex, you know, it's like competing for supremacy. These two things. Text 17.
Satvat sanjayate jnanam rajaso lobha eva cha pramada moha tamaso bhavato ajnanam eva cha.
So this verse is describing the intermediate causes whereas text 16 was describing the ultimate results. So these are the intermediate causes to the results described, given in verse 16. Or you could say intermediate results. From motive passion, real knowledge develops. And therefore there's purity. And that's the ultimate result given in text 16. From passion, greed develops, and therefore there's dukkha, misery. And the mode of ignorance, one develops madness and illusion, and this brings about ajnana, or ignorance. So that's how it works. This verse here is a kind of preliminary or intermediate causes to the end results. Prabhupada writes in the commentary, since his present civilization is not very congenial to the living entities. What a statement. Very broad statement. The civilization, the whole entire civilization is not congenial to any of the living entities. So everybody's got it wrong. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is recommended. Through Krishna consciousness, society will develop the mode of goodness. And when the mode of goodness is developed, people will see things as they are. Right? The knowledge and discrimination will develop. Then people will appreciate the devotees. They'll appreciate these books more. They'll appreciate the devotees' activities more. If they come to a mode of goodness, the discrimination will rise. Prabhupada writes in the middle of the commentary, if a certain percentage of the population develops Krishna consciousness and becomes situated in goodness, then there is the possibility for peace and prosperity all over the world. even if the majority of the people aren't happy and prosperous, but if just a certain percentage of the population develops Krishna consciousness and sattva gun, then there's a possibility for peace and sanity. And greed is like one of the major things in passion. And he comments on that later, a few more sentences down in the commentary. One can see that even if one has enough money and adequate arrangements for sense gratification, there is neither happiness nor peace of mind. That is not possible because one is situated in the mode of passion. If one wants happiness at all, his money will not help him. He has to elevate himself to the mode of goodness by practicing Krishna consciousness. Because even the richest people in the world, they're not happy because this greed is there. They have millions of dollars and they want to make millions more. You know, you may think that, wow, if I had $1 million, that would be like enough for the rest of my life. And maybe for you it would, you know. But when someone's in the mode of passion, then there's this greed. And usually, in order to make $1 million, there has to be some passion. A person has to have desire and endeavor, and then he has to, you know, be a little fanatical in his business, always thinking about it constantly, on the phone, 24 hours a day, and sometimes even snuffing out the competitors, you know, getting rid of the people who are standing in your way, to make it in the business world, you have to be tough, right? And, you know, these people, they stay up till 11, 12 o'clock, they're on the telephone, overseas calls, investments in America or Japan or something like that. And they, like this, very much in passion comes in. So it's hard to weed out lobha or greed engaged in such business activity. It's possible if one is a devotee and he has help and he's doing bhakti sadhan and so on and so forth. But usually it's very hard. Then that person would also have to make some restrictions himself. He's got to go to sleep by 10 and, you know, whatever. Not stay up all night on the telephone making business deals. You know. Okay. Now this is the last verse in this section.
Urdvam gacchanti sattvastar madye tishtanti rajasaha jaghanya guna vrittista adho gacchanti tamasaha.
Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. So here you have three verbs. Gacchanti, urdvam gacchanti, goes up. Madhye tishtanti, he stays the same. And adho ganchanti, he goes down. So going up means to satyaloka. And madhye tishtanti means remains in manushyaloka. And adho ganchanti means he goes to hell. Prabhupada mentions also the highest planet is Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. This is where Lord Brahma lives. In this very life. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Yeah, you can see it also. Let's just finish this. I mean, basically we're finished, but mode of passion, Prabhupada says that it's in the middle. Said passion is mixed. You got it's in the middle of goodness and ignorance. He's not always pure. But even if he was purely in passion, he would just remain on the earth as a rich man or a king, something like that. But because there are mixtures, one can also go down. He says, in passion, there's also a chance of becoming mad in the next life. And Prabhupada says, ignorance here is very, very risky. It's the lowest quality. And you can go down to birds, beasts, reptiles, trees, etc. Now, in the 11th canto, chapter 13, text 4, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava and he gives 10 hetus or causes for the modes of nature. And the idea is that if you adjust these items, 10 very practical suggestions, then you can, these are the 10 ways to adjust your mode, to improve your mode of nature by practice, if you're determined. Then Krishna tells Uddhava the 10 specific things that you can adjust. First one is agama, the shastras that you read. So if you're reading sattvic shastras, then you'll develop mode of sattva or goodness. Then apa means water and or food in this case. So the water should be very clean, pure, not beer or wine. It shouldn't be dirty. And, you know. So if you have clean water and clean food, sattvic food, then that helps. Food is very important. The food is sattvic, then the body, you know, you are what you eat. So gradually you develop sattvic lakshanas by eating sattvic food. Of course, people in passion, they don't like sattvic food. But if someone's in passion, knows the difference through shastra, then gradually he can increase his sattvic foods, and then gradually he'll come to the mode of goodness more, and then he'll develop a taste for sattvic foods. Right? Because as the mode goes up, upgrades, then the tastes will also upgrade. The discrimination will come into the tongue. So that's two. Then you have praja and desha. Praja means his association in general, his friends, his work partners, and it can also mean his children and family members. So your association obviously is very important. If you're associating with sattvic people, then you develop sattva guna. And desha, the place you're living, is important. Generally, the forest is considered sattvic, the city is rajasic, and the brothel and the liquor house is in ignorance. Or the ghetto, I guess you could say. In the West, you have ghettos. People do all these bad things. Of course, in the temple, it's Nirgun, Vaikuntha. The temple is actually Nirgun. You may not be yet Nirgun, but if you stay in the temple, gradually you'll become Nirgun also. Then there's Kala and Karma. So the time of the day that you're most active will change your mode, because the mode of goodness is in the morning, from, say, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock until maybe 10 or 11. Then Rajagun starts to gradually come. Right? After around 10 or 11, the mode of passion comes. Then passion is all day until around 6 or 7, or maybe 7 or 8. Then the sun goes down, then ignorance comes in. That's why people get tired at night, because it's the mode of ignorance becomes prominent around 8, 9, you get tired, 10 o'clock, definitely, right? And so then ignorance is going on, and then again 3 or 4 o'clock, then the higher modes come in again. So, you know, if you're up all night, that means, as we described, you know, you like ignorance. But those who wake up early and go to sleep early, then they're forcing their body and mind to actually develop the mode of goodness. I mean, how many of you woke up at 4 o'clock before you became a devotee? Very few people do this, if anybody, and in the West they never do. They go to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning. And not only that, in the West, they shower about once a week. Yeah. This is common for non-devotees, to shower once a week. I never knew anyone who showered daily in the West. My friends, my parents, my relatives, neighbors, nobody showered every day. It was and then karma means the work that you do. As we said, you know, driving a taxi is not conducive for sattva gun, but rather rajas will come. But being a teacher or a librarian or a scientist or a professor or poet or a priest is more conducive for the mode of goodness. Huh? No, not the kind of professor you had, Shyamarup. Then there's Janma, Dhyanam, and Mantra. So your birth, you have some conditioning from birth. It means your family, environment, the training and association of your parents, this is very influential. You can't really change that because it's already happened. But you can maybe contemplate it. And huh? Yeah. But probably more than the genes is the association. Yeah, the upbringing, the training, association when you're a child. That's very, very influential on us. That you can't change. But the other nine items you can change. Dhyanam means your meditation. You can try to change that. And mantra. Your mantra should be sattvic or nirgun. And the tenth item is samskars. And so it's 11, 13, 4. Krishna is giving this list to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. The commentary says, Haribo, the commentary writes, the 10 items mentioned above possess superior and inferior qualities and are thus identified as being in goodness, passion, or ignorance. One can increase the mode of goodness by selecting religious scriptures in goodness, pure water, friendship, and other persons in goodness, and so on. One should scrupulously avoid any of these 10 items that may be polluted by an inferior mode of nature. So anyway, these are the things to look for in trying to actually adjust your situation. And probably the most important ones would be apa, food and water, and probably karma and praja, yeah, association and your work. The samskars are, there's different lists of samskars, but here's the, I think, the classic list. I think this is from Manusamhita, but I didn't write notes. Garbhadan, first one. You're not responsible for that one, but your parents are. Second one, Pungsavana. When there's prayers for the child in the third month of pregnancy, pungsavana, prayers for a male, for a boy. That's how they do. That's why it's called pungsa. Yeah. Pungsavana. Three is simantanayana, also during pregnancy. This is, I think I had some other notes. Oh yeah, here we go. This is in the 6th month of pregnancy, and the lady parts her hair and puts the kumkum, and there's some ceremony. Some. And then there's Jata Karma, 4th one, the birth ceremony. They say there's some licking of honey during the ceremony. I guess the child licks that, huh? Gives the honey to the child. Then 5, Namkarana, the name-giving ceremony. Then 6 is Nishkramana, coming out from the maternity room. Because the child is actually meant to stay in the same room for quite a number of months. A long time. I forget what it was. Maybe one of you know. Huh? 1 month. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, something like that. A couple months. And remember, somebody brought their child to the temple in Russia, and the child was just 2 weeks old. I said, what are you doing? You have to keep the child in one room at least for a couple months. The child has to be, you know, not moved around during this time. It's not good. So that's Nishkramana. There's some ceremony. Then 7 is anaprashana. You know what that is, giving the food. Some sweet rice usually they give. Some grains. Mahaprasad. Paramanand. Vaishnav Paramanand gives some sweet rice. Then 8, chuda karma, cutting the hair. Chuda karma. Chuda. I guess chuda means hair or cutting. I guess it means cutting, huh? Sounds like that. Huh? 9 is upanayana. Right? The holy thread of the Brahman. The age depends on what varna you have. Brahman can get it about 9 years old, but the Shudra, you know, not Shudra, but the Vaishya maybe 13, like that's different. Like Krishna, he was about 11 and 12 years old. But from Brahman family, a little bit, few years earlier. You can look in the folio, there's some exact, there's different opinions, but there's, in Manusamhita, there's some description also of that. Then 10 is Keshanta, shaving him up, right? Shave up. Chuda karma is different. That's, they just cut the, you know, the hair is long and they cut, but now they shave. That's a different, you don't shave the head when the child's so young. You know, the child's just... Don't get them mixed up. The head's too soft for shaving and during the chuda karma. Then the 11th one is samavartana, returning from the gurukul. Samavartana. There's different lists, and there's some. The last one here is vivaha, the marriage ceremony. In some other lists, they have the funeral ceremony, burning the body. Yes, whatever you say. At the end. No, they don't do that one. Well, they don't know if he's going to be a sannyasi when he's, you know, just coming out of the maternity room. They do all of them. The only one that the sannyasi doesn't do is, you know, the funeral ceremony. They don't burn the body of the sannyasis because they're already detached. So there's no need to burn the body. Normal people are attached to their body, so the ghost will hang around the body. So they don't want that, so they burn the body. Will set him free. The sannyasi doesn't care about his body, even when he's alive. And what to speak of when the body's dead. So these things help. The samskaras are is the last item, the 10th item. So that samskaras help to bring the mode of goodness. Okay, so we'll stop the class now. You can ask a few questions. We see this very practical suggestions for adjusting the modes. Prabhupada said that if you practice and if you want, you can actually come to goodness. It's a matter of what you want, your determination, and practicing. It takes practice. If you don't practice, okay, if you're chanting, gradually you'll come to the mode of goodness. But if you want to come there quicker, then you should practice. Because as I said, we're not chanting Shuddha Nam. You know, our Bhakti Sadhana is very weak. Bhakti Siddhanta said that if you're not chanting 64 rounds, you're fallen. That's usually what Bhakti Sadhana means. So we need some support and some to augment our practice of bhakti to bring us to nishtha. And so here, Krishna is giving some suggestions. Yes. Okay, but the psychophysical nature will change according to the when the modes change. Because the mentality, the psyche, is based a lot on the modes of nature. In passion, one is very dutiful, pensive, thoughtful, careful, gentle, vidyavanaya sampane, right? And passion, there's greed, hankering, restlessness, always changing, right? Attachment to the fruits, and in ignorance, this laziness and moroseness, procrastination, and illusion, lazy, you know, all of these things, sleeping. So the psyche is primarily based on the modes of nature. Of course, somebody also has their dosha, their physical body, you know, like in goodness. I mean, in kapha, you have attachment, and in vata, you have fear, and in pitta, you have anger. But those doshas also change, and that's the physical body. But anyway, all of those things are adjusted as severe, intermediate, or controlled according to the mode of nature. The mode of nature is more powerful. In other words, you may be a pitta, but if you develop, and usually you're angry, you have a tendency towards anger in pitta dosha. But if you develop goodness, you can control that. And kapha dosha, there's attachment and enjoying mood, joking, eating a lot. Kapha dosha people are always jolly and friendly, and their bodies are quite big, you know. And they like milk products and sweets and ice cream and, you know, like this. Kapha dosha, that's, right? So that attachment, that can also be controlled. The enjoying propensity can be quelled by the mode of goodness. So the mode is going to be more important than in this case. Those things are, you know, kind of have to do with your physical body. That you can't change too much, but there's different levels of, you know, control. So, you wanted to hear more about the psychophysical nature and the modes of nature and what exactly? Yeah, the relationship. So then I guess we can talk about some varnas too, right? Because psychophysical nature means, the body and the psyche, that means you're going to have a certain varna based on that too. So, say there's a Vaishya person, then he has passion primary and ignorance secondary. And that person, through training, through diet and hygiene, he can increase the mode of goodness. That means ignorance will decrease. His passion will go there, but he'll come to the level where there's passion and goodness, like a kshatriya, where his passion is prominent and then goodness is secondary. That's like an administrator type person. So that person will develop that increased goodness. Goodness will come in a little bit. Then later, his goodness will increase, and the tamas will go down. Then he'll be like a more peaceful administrator, sattvic, you know, kshatriya. And then finally he'll come more to goodness. And as we said yesterday, the person doesn't have to change his occupation, but the way he performs the occupation may change. Like instead of a devotee, or instead of a man working in a high pressure company, you know, where there's a lot of responsibility on him, and he has to stay late hours, and you know, this kind of thing, where there's a lot of high pressure job with a lot of money involved, then he will avoid that kind of, because it's too, he won't have enough time, you know, to develop his sattva. So he'll take a back seat in the company, let someone else be the big shot, get all the money, and, you know, have a little bit more freedom and a little bit more time for himself, like this. Now, of course, we were talking, generally we're talking in the context of devotees. So the devotee can adjust his work, although his occupation may be the same, so that he has more time for his bhakti sadhana in the morning. So basically, goodness will increase, and tamas will decrease, and gradually passion will decrease, and the person will become more peaceful, satisfied, thoughtful, careful, gentle, like this. The sattva qualities will come within that devotee. Some other specific point? He doesn't have to. Usually it's hard to change the occupation because you have a certain body, people accept you in a certain way. You've already been trained in the occupation. Even if you changed, you'd have to get new training. And then even if you had the new training, the people in the society would question your ability because they would see that that's not your bodily varna. You know what I mean? So better, it's safer, it's simpler, it's easier, and less hassle just to remain in your occupation. You know, if you have someone who's born in the Shudra family, then he becomes a teacher, a professor. You know, the students they'll doubt his abilities, right? Because they'll say, he's not a Brahmin. Then others will say, yeah, but he knows a lot. Yeah, but I don't, you know, people would criticize that person, you know. He's not from a Brahmin family. Listen to his voice. You know, rough kind of voice, big hands, right? Big body, right? Sometimes in Russia, you see that there's a boy that's, you know, from a very simple family. He's on the altar, you know, and he's got like big arm, big hands, you know, kind of, you know what I mean? Like, going like this, you know. Looks so strange. But he's like training, he's like doing this, you know, highly purified brahminical activity. Of course, it's not bad, he's thinking of Krishna, but it looks kind of funny, you know. He's a pujari, you know, his hands like a football player, and, you know, big shoulders and kind of gross, you know, expression on the face. But anyway, it's like training, you know, it's they're just getting the benefit of some sattva guns coming into the print. More and more sattva guns coming. That means some knowledge will come, discrimination will come, good judgment, peacefulness, satisfaction, happiness. So, it's all good. But he cannot, generally, he won't be able to stay in that situation for very long. Usually, like that. Usually. But for a year or two, maybe he can do something like this. But you can see it's very much against the nature of his body. So. Yeah, something more.
Does it mean that, like yesterday we were discussing, that according to the mode which we have, we choose services also? That in the beginning, we are still, and that service may be anything.
Well, what do you mean by real liking?
I mean to say, like.
You mean on the pure spiritual platform?
Not of Sarup.
But then what? Then what can you mean? Then? That's what I mean. You can't actually define what you mean by real liking, and no one else can either. A different activity, or maybe the same activity. It sounds okay. You want to add to this? Confusing question? It's already confusing. You're not going to make it more confusing, are you? Maybe, I hope so. I'm not sure I fully understand what you want me to say. Yeah, we already discussed that in another class, right? In the beginning, of course, the psychophysical influence will be more because the person's more conditioned. So naturally, he'll be more inclined to do some work which is suitable for his psychophysical nature. And that activity will give him great joy. Because he likes the activity, because it's suitable to his body and his mind. And then later, he may do the same activity or change, but either way, his motive will be more focused on what's pleasing to Guru and Krishna. So then, at that point, when he's less conditioned, then he's more concerned with pleasing Krishna. And he can do different things because he's becoming more and more freed from the modes of nature. So then, you know, he may do something else if it's needed or if he can function properly in that other project and other service. Or because he's been doing the other thing for so long and it's part of his psychophysical nature anyway, then he might as well continue doing that. Because he's good at it, and he's developed it, and people also accept him in that role, and you know what I mean? So, he may change when he's able to switch, when the modes are not so strong, he can function in different ways. And he gets more pleasure from his bhajan than the activity itself. It's, in one sense, you can say it doesn't matter what he's doing. So, but the main thing is the devotee just wants to do the thing which he can do best for Krishna's pleasure and for the Vaishnava's pleasure. So then he'll just usually do the thing that he's developed throughout his life. Because then he has the most expertise and practice in that particular field, whether it's fundraising or construction of new temples or administration or education. Maybe so many different things. Anyway, we shouldn't get, you know, develop paralysis through analysis. I don't know if that touches on your part B. I kind of forgot what part B was. Can somebody explain what he wanted to hear about? Do you remember too? No? Okay, you go ahead. it doesn't necessarily correspond with his swarup or his eternal individuality or his eternal propensity. It doesn't. Well, it's better not to try to project psychophysical or conditional traits onto a great devotee. That's a little dangerous. Better just to see that Krishna has directed him in that way, and he's serving the Vaishnavas in that way. He may have some other capacities, but he seems to fit, you know, in that way, so Krishna's using him in that way. Prabhupada does mention in the Nectar of Devotion that some devotees like hearing and chanting, other devotees like to do yatra, parayatra, other devotees like to worship the deity, and some, you know, they have different inclinations, and he mentions that a devotee should, you know, do that service that he likes the best. You know. So, and he said that's natural and that's actually good. There should be a gradually development of taste in one of the angas, or two or three of the angas of bhakti, particular angas of bhakti. And that's kind of part of his blossoming, you know, eternal constitutional nature. It may not be specifically correlating to his sarup, but it's something that has to do with his getting to that sarup and his blossoming as a devotee spiritually. But individuality is always present, and if it's in a conditioned state, then it's based upon the psychophysical nature and the modes of nature. And then later it may be based upon some other things, about taste in angas of bhakti, and later, even later, you know, his bhava, you know, his predilection in regards to his, you know, his swarup and his rati, you know, his mood of love. But these things are all, you know, kind of very gradually developing and blossoming in the devotee. So it's hard to intellectually dissect everything and then analyze the correlations on the different levels, because it's all blending somehow in a kind of beautiful orchestra of the person's life. The human being's a little bit too complex to be able to analyze on such a level. But it's better to not to, you know, superimpose or project our ideas on why some devotee is acting in the Of course, if someone's, you know, like they're younger than, you know, 15, 20 years in the movement, then no doubt they're probably working based upon their psychophysical nature. But if they've been around for a long time, then there may be some other things which are moving them, which we may not be able to, you know, perceive so directly. I mean, you can ask, Maharaj, what moves you to do this seva? But probably he won't even know very much about it himself. Or even if he did, he probably wouldn't want to just say, yes, Krishna, you know, has impelled me in such a way. And I don't know. Devotees are humble and they don't... Yeah, of course. It will be proportionate to the intensity of his passion. How much loba will be there, and ashama, arambha. Well, it says if you're lusty and greedy and... But that's like also considering that there's some piety and there must be also something... Because Prabhupada mentioned a king, you know, a rich man. Right? So that means there has to be piety there along with the... with those qualities. If somebody's just... He said if someone's purely passionate, without any ignorance, and then he'll take birth on human being as a rich man. So that means there would be no ignorance there. But when the Kama, Krodha, and Lobha are like, you know, increasing and increasing, and the person is performing sinful activities, then there's ignorance also. I mean, Kama may be born from lust, but it can quickly degenerate down to ignorance. And then there's anger. So, these things create a lot of sinful activities, and then when the person's sinful, then he goes to hell. But if the person, you know, kind of checks that sinfulness, and there's just some kind of, within the realm of piety, there's also passion, and there's some greed, you know, and endeavor, restlessness kind of thing. If he's acting within the realm of piety, then he'll take birth again amongst those who are performing fruitive activities. And if he's committed sinful activities, then he'll take birth as a human, you know, with an ugly face, in a low-born family, in a poor family, and with low intelligence, right? And he won't be able to rise up very high, but he'll still be performing, he'll still have his lobha and everything, and he'll be performing human activities. And if he's more pious, with a little passion, which means there's going to be lust and greed also, then he'll take birth, you know, as a king or some aristocratic wealthy man. So that, you know, we cannot ascribe the sinfulness in passion, although it certainly pushes you in that direction. But there's pious people who, you know, there's passionate people who are pious also. I mean, it's like, you know, any person, like the Birlas and the Hindujas. You know, have you met these people? They're passionate, you know, but they're pious. But, you know, that's the kind of person I was thinking about when I was telling you about he's on the telephone late at night, you know, these international calls, and he's like on the move, you know, and the passion's pushing him. But he's also pious, he's giving millions of dollars, you know, to us and to ISKCON and to other organizations. He goes to the temple to see the deity every day, and he stays there for maybe 20, 30 minutes, dancing in the kirtan. Then he goes back to his home. It's very, you know, opulent home. And he stays up late at night making all these deals. He's always thinking about, you know, the stock market and money and different investments. And, you know, you can see the passion in him. When you talk to him, you can see it. It's just there. He doesn't chant 16 rounds and, you know, he doesn't study the Bhagavatam and all this, you know, like we're doing. But he's pious. So the piety and the sinfulness is there's a big range there. But in the general statement is that these three things send you to hell, especially if they're uncontrolled. And if the person's not in the Vedic scenario, if he's not doing any pujas, if he's not giving any charity, if he has no idea about God, if he's not practicing any religion, then surely he will go to hell. So, you know, you can't take one sutra and then just compare it, because there's different degrees of piety and sinfulness even amongst those who are passionate or who are lusty. I mean, a man may have, 12 children, 15 children. That shows there's some passion in his family, But he may be pious. He may never look at another woman other than his wife. He may strictly control himself, But he may have all his children. That means there's passion, but he's not allowing himself to act irreligiously. So that person's not going to go to hell, even though there's passion. Right? I mean, we have to use our common sense and, we have to look at the whole scenario. Yeah, right, exactly. Those who are following the Shastric injunctions, it will help to maintain his. And if he strictly follows, gradually it will elevate him to goodness. But at least it will maintain him, on the platform that he's on, as far as his piety, his next birth. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.